The date is December 19th, 1986, and we're watching Little Shop of Horrors. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to another spooky I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Audrey 2 to my Seymour Krelborn.
Hello, feed me, I'm Colin Stewart.
There it is. And, well, I mean, it's a Halloween tradition. It happened with The Lost Boys. It happened with Arachnophobia, The Shining, Silence of the Lambs. And so after 4 years of making this young lady sit through some of the scariest movies, we brought a lighthearted one this week. But please welcome back for the fifth annual Halloween episode, Miss Maren Richardson. Maren, welcome back.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. Wow, fifth year.
Oh, half years.
A decade. Wow. Seriously.
But one of our longest standing traditions of bringing Maren on for a Halloween movie. So
I'm not sitting at the edge of my seat too badly this year.
It's yeah, all right. Yeah.
I felt, you know, I was like, okay, I can chillax a little bit here.
Yeah, this one we're at least right up your alley with a musical. Yeah. Well, this week we're looking back at December 1986 when the movies and theaters were Alan Quatermain in The Lost City of Gold, The Golden Child, King Kong Lives. I'm waiting for just all the blank expressions on Colin's face there with those ones. Have you heard of either of those ones?
I've heard of Alan Quatermain, but only because I think that character is in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, yes, I believe so, yeah. The Golden Child is an Eddie Murphy movie where he tried to do something serious-ish, I guess. Subject of episode 35, Three Amigos, also in theaters. And of course, our movie for today, Little Shop of Horrors, which earned $39 million on a $25 million budget. I mean, we got Steve Martin in two movies at the same time in 1986.
Yeah, and very different roles.
Very, very different roles, yeah. This is Dusty Bottoms is not this dentist.
No. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you like John Candy and Bill Murray, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yeah, so this movie was originally supposed to be a July release. It was intended to be a summer blockbuster, but they had to do some reshoots, which, because of some bad test screenings, which pushed it back to December. So, I don't know. Okay. Would it have done better? Well, the tagline that appears on the poster for... I've got five taglines this week, but honestly, a lot of them aren't very good, I don't think. But here we go. Number one, put a rare houseplant on your television. It talks, it sings, it eats people. And that was a home video ad.
Okay.
Back in the day when you could put a houseplant on a television because they were wide enough to hold a houseplant. I remember my grandma's house with a plant on the TV.
Yeah, that's true. I remember we used to have like a massive TV that for some reason, even in my youth, I would haul from like the living room to my room if I wanted like more privacy or something. Yeah, and that thing was a bitch.
Well, number two, it's the most outrageous musical comedy in years.
I wonder how many musical comedies had come up by this point.
I guess, is Rocky Horror classified as a musical comedy?
I guess. That was, what, 84?
Yeah.
Probably?
Yeah, I mean...
So it's probably the most outrageous musical comedy since Rocky Horror. They should have just said that.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. Number three, a singing plant, a daring hero, a sweet girl, a demented dentist. That feels like the cat, the bat, the penguin. Yeah. You know? Total Batman tagline there. Well, number four, meet me at the funniest shop in town. Is it that funny?
No.
Yeah. That's an odd one to me. Well, finally, number five, and this one, the only decent one, I guess. It makes the most sense. Don't feed the plants.
Sure. Yeah. I guess it's pre Gremlins, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Wait. Wasn't Gremlins 84? I thought Gremlins was 84. I think it is. Yeah, same year as Karate Kid. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, those aren't very good descriptions of the movie, so let's go to Colin for a spooky 60-second synopsis.
Ooh. Okay. Seymour Krelborn works in Mr. Mushnick's struggling flower shop on Skid Row, where he pines for his coworker Audrey, who is dating a sadistic motorcycle-riding dentist named Orin. During a total solar eclipse, Seymour finds and purchases an exotic plant, which he names Audrey 2. Audrey 2 attracts customers, turning Mr. Mushnick's fortune around and making Seymour into a minor celebrity. But Seymour soon discovers that Audrey 2 can't survive on sunshine and dirt. Oh no. She needs human flesh and blood to sate her appetite. This discovery leads Seymour down a path of unintentional murder as he tries to keep Audrey 2 alive and save Audrey 1 from her abusive relationship. Oh, and then the plant ends up being an alien. There you go.
Right on. Oh. So, Littlest Shop of Horrors. Or Littlest. Why did I say Littlest? Littlest Shop of Horrors.
Shop of Horrors on the Prairie.
I know. I guess I'm thinking still of the funniest shop in town. And so now it's the Littlest. Yeah. And maybe tomorrow this shop will settle down. Okay, that's
Littlest Hobo.
Yeah, yeah. Marin is not catching half of these references because she's like, you know, 12 years old. So, yeah, Little Shop of Horrors was my favorite musical for the longest time until Book of Mormon came into existence. Yeah, Book of Mormon is my all-time favorite now. But I, for some reason, because, you know, we always have those bucket list castings of ourselves when we're in the acting game that we think of as that's a role I really want to play. Seymour Krelborn is one of the only lead characters that has ever made my bucket list for acting. I would have loved to have been Seymour Krelborn when I was, you know, younger. I don't think I could pull off Seymour anymore. But for some reason, I just love the music. I love the movie. However, the musical itself, I saw for the first time earlier this year. That was the time I've ever seen the stage version, but I have been listening to the soundtrack since I was 11 years old. When I was first introduced to musical theater. So that's just me with Little Shop of Horrors. I've always loved this musical. I've always loved this version with Rick Moranis.
Is your love of the musical based on the movie, or were you listening to the soundtrack before the movie?
Well, my introduction to musicals as a whole was Man of La Mancha. And then I went down to my local library and looked up some other soundtracks, and I found the Little Shop of Horrors soundtrack, and I listened to that first. And then it was like, wait, what? There's a movie version? Okay. So that was always my history with Little Shop of Horrors until I finally saw it on stage. Yeah. So, Marin, what about you? Have you ever seen this movie? And I mean, I know you are well versed in musicals because we met doing a musical. I'm wearing my Oklahoma shirt right now. That's where all three of us, that's where our Venn diagram overlaps, is Oklahoma. So, what about Little Shop of Horrors? Do you know it? Have you ever been in it?
No, so like I kind of had like the same thing. Like I found the soundtrack first, so I know the musical. I've never seen it on stage, and I actually have never seen the movie either. And so it was the first time that I saw it, but I knew that it was like a movie adaptation of the musical, and so like I knew the music when watching the movie, but I never saw it. But I had like friends in musical settings, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, like this was such a horror. This movie scared me as a child." And I'm like, "Oh, like okay, like a musical, a musical like adaptation, sure, all right." And then recently, I just sang Suddenly Seymour in a concert, but then I didn't know, like I knew the music as well, but I didn't really know like all the plot, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because there are some of those soundtracks that you can pick up and it's like, oh yeah, I've just watched the show. Like Hamilton is one of those where there is basically nothing else in Hamilton that isn't in the soundtrack album. So, but then you have those shows where it's like, oh no, there's a lot of dialogue tying this stuff together. Now it makes more sense.
It definitely made more sense after I watched the movie. But the thing is, I never watched the movie, and I couldn't find it anywhere online. I couldn't on Apple TV, no, like nowhere for me to see. And so I went on YouTube and tried to find like a bootleg of the movie. I found shows, but I was like, oh, I'll try to find the movie. And the only one that I found was this horrible squeaky voice version, and had piano playing underneath, and I watched the movie with that on top of listening to the musical numbers. So it was an experience.
That's a very interesting experience. Yeah, Colin texted me a few days ago and said, "Hey, I can't find it anywhere. Do you have it on DVD?" And I happen to have it on DVD. And then I lent him the DVD and realized that, whoops, I haven't watched it yet. And so I had to go find myself a copy. And I think I watched a different version than what I gave Colin because I have the one that has the restored original ending.
Oh, the 1960 was the restored 1961, because they just put that out not too long ago.
No, in the restored 1986, you guys probably, I mean, this jumps into the movie, but you guys probably saw the version where Audrey lives and they go off into a house to be happy. Yeah, I saw the version where Audrey gets eaten, so does Seymour, and the plants take over the fucking world.
I saw that one. There's twins
Okay.
for the same movie.
That was the one that was that test audiences hated was the plants taking over the world, and that's why they did the reshoots and let Audrey and Seymour live happily ever after instead.
Oh, so Colin watched a different one.
And I realized that after I watched the movie because I'm like, wait a minute, I don't remember all this shit. What's going on? Anyway,
Well, I
but
was confused
Colin.
because I feel like in the play, it had like I was like, I remember Seymour getting eaten in the play at some point. Like
Yeah, I'll hack you
he
out from the inside.
Anyways, my experience, I had never listened to the soundtrack, I'd never seen the movie, and I'd only my first touch with Little Shop of Horrors when it was playing at the Citadel. Well, I
Earlier
guess
this
that was
year.
earlier this year, yeah. And so I went and saw it. And yeah, that's basically my only knowledge of this movie up until this point.
Well, there we go. Let's jump into Little Shop of Horrors, doing our first Halloween episode here, directed by Frank Oz, produced by, voice of Miss Piggy, Frank Oz, produced by David Geffen, at the big time music producer, and written by Howard Ashman, who has the screenplay and the based on the musical play by. Roger Corman, who is based on the film by, and Charles B. Griffith, who is based on the 1960 screenplay. So this is a movie that was originally made in the 1960s, but not as a musical. So I know Marin messaged me and said, "Hey, we're watching the 1980s one, right? Not the 60s one." But I doubt you've ever seen the 60s one, either of you?
I watched half until I realized.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Yeah, so did you get to see Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Jack Nicholson, that's what the Bill Murray character in this movie is based on, is the character that Jack Nicholson played. And I believe that was Jack Nicholson's debut movie.
Oh.
Was Little Shop of Horrors, yeah. So we open this movie with, a Star Wars-like crawl, because that's just the easiest way to do it. I love, just right off the bat, I love the sets of this movie. I just love that it's all done on a soundstage, and it's unapologetically on a soundstage.
Yeah, it reminded me of like the Schumacher Batman movies in that way.
Totally. Yeah. So let's go at it this way. Do either of you, let's start with Marin. Favorite musical number in this movie? Because, I mean, Skid Row, like, when we open this movie with Skid Row and everything, it's a banger.
It is a banger. Like, I'm trying to think. I'm pulling it up here. I loved whenever, like, the girls would come out and dance. Mm-hmm. I always loved that. The harmonies were on point all the time. And Skid Row, it starts, I'm like, oh, wow, okay. I see where this is going. Feed Me I was laughing during that. Because I was like, whoa, like, here he goes and throws out all these runs. But I don't know if I have a favorite. I mean, I'm there for the heartfelt ballad, so suddenly Seymour to me, like, I love that one. But
I've always loved that one, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I'll go with that.
Yeah, Suddenly Seymour. Yeah, Colin, what you, any favorite musical number or favorite musical moment?
I mean, I gotta say first, like, I was very impressed by Rick Moranis.
Right?
Every time he sang, because he's just, like, not a guy I've ever seen in a movie and been, like... Like, he just looks like the guy who would not be able to, like, keep any sort of, like, pitch or tone. Like, he just looks like he'd be super tone deaf for whatever reason. That's my judgment of him. Mm-hmm. But, I thought he did an amazing job. I think Grow for me was probably my favorite, mostly because I was just like, I'm partial to any song I think I could sing, and I was like, oh, if I was gonna pick a new audition song from this movie, I'd probably pick that one.
I've used that as an audition song before. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that's one of my go-to audition songs. That and Mr. Cellophane from Chicago.
Chicago, that was my 2020 musical. That was our last show, and it got canceled, and I'm so sad.
Yeah.
So sad. It was gonna be so cool. I was Velma in it.
Oh wow, nice.
For some reason, I'm a soprano. I don't know how that worked.
Yeah. Well, you brought up the man himself, the lead of this movie, Seymour Krelborn. So let's run down this cast list, Colin.
All right. Yeah, Rick Moranis is Seymour Krelborn, our main man.
I remember in Malcolm in the Middle, they always referred to the nerd class as Krelborn class. So I'm assuming it's because of this.
Is that what? For some reason, that makes sense. Back in the day, I used to always think they were calling them Krelboins.
Well, see, that's how it sounds too. Yeah. Okay. That's something that's always nagged at me.
Still a mystery. Ellen Green is Audrey.
Who we saw in Wagons East, also with John Candy.
Ah.
Yeah, she was the lady of the evening.
Right.
And I got her confused with, she reminds me of the actress who was in Matilda, the mom. I get her, like, really mixed up. I thought it was her.
Yeah, I could see that.
I forget her name, but she's been in lots of movies, the lady Matilda.
Ellen Green is the person that originated the character of Audrey on Broadway, or I guess off Broadway, and then
Oh yeah, that's right. She was in Cabaret too.
Yeah, and Cyndi Lauper and Madonna were possibilities. Yeah.
I don't know how that would have worked.
Yeah,
I feel like there was something, like, obviously, like. You know, the character is very, like, you know, chest forward, we'll say.
Yeah.
But the actress is so like she does such a good job of being so like meek and like and understated. But I feel like I don't know if Madonna or Cyndi Lauper could pull that off.
Yeah, they seem a little tougher, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, doctor. Sorry, doctor.
Vincent Gardenia plays Mr. Mushnick. Steve Martin plays Oren Scrivello, the dentist.
That was one that had a lot of alternate castings. Tim Curry, John Travolta, Dan Aykroyd, Robin Williams.
John Travolta.
Yeah. Staying alive, right? So, or and Grease, right? He's a musicals guy. Mickey Dolenz from The Monkees and Gene Wilder. Those were all casting possibilities for the dentist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Levi Stubbs was the voice of Audrey 2.
And he's a one of the original members of the Four Tops.
Okay.
Can't help myself. I want you and nobody else. Bum, bum, bada, yeah.
Tashina Arnold, Michelle Weeks, and Tisha Campbell play Crystal Ronette and Chiffon, the three I don't know, I call them like narrators, but really they're just like the musical interlude.
Yeah, they're like muses in like Hercules or Sirens,
Right.
you know, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Jim Belushi is Patrick Martin, John Candy is Wink Wilkinson. Christopher Guest is the first customer who comes into the shop after Audrey 2 is there.
Unrecognizable from Princess Bride, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill Murray is Arthur Denton. Miriam Margolyes is a dental nurse.
Yeah, I
I
think
think those are the main people.
yeah, shout out to Heather Henson, the daughter of Jim Henson, who is one of the dentist's patients. She's the one with like the big metal thing on her face. Jim
Okay.
Henson's daughter, yeah.
And I think the one, the dental, I think you said the dental nurse. I don't remember. I saw her. She was in Harry Potter. She was the lady that did all like the plant, the herbology and plants.
Oh.
She was in
Madame
there.
Sprout.
Yeah, she was in there.
Huh.
And I
Okay.
don't know if that was maybe the nurse or what, but I saw her somewhere.
Is that what she maybe? Yeah,
Maybe, or
that's
am I thinking
no,
about
but Miriam Margolyes, yes, actually from, yes, I believe you are right because I know
Yeah,
she
you are
is a
right.
famous British actress, yeah, because I've heard her name shouted out on the podcast My Dad Wrote a Porno, so,
Oh.
and they're British, they're, yeah,
Oh yeah,
hilarious
no.
podcast.
Well, I'm more good with faces than with names, so
Yeah,
I'm like,
okay.
oh, I've seen her.
Yeah, see, I know Colin's kind of the same as me, whereas sometimes it's so easy to get fooled by someone where it's just like, oh, wow, yeah. Some people on this show, we've seen them like 7 times, and it's like each time it's like, really? We've seen them before? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so now the opening scene where we do have the three ladies singing, it's pouring rain, but they're not getting wet. Is that
Yeah,
digital
it's
rain? Because the
or it's like
puddles are splashing. So for 86, if they're doing some sort of animation in there, that is incredible. I have no idea how they're not getting wet.
yeah, I don't know. I was gonna say it could just be like a perspective trick of some sort, but
Yeah.
I'd have to watch it
Yeah.
again. I was noticing it
Maybe
though.
they're walking through some sort of alleyway.
Yeah,
Yeah.
when I was watching it today. And I was like, something seems wrong about this. Like they're in the rain, but and I was trying to look, I was like, they aren't getting wet. It's not like it's
Yeah.
not hitting them.
I mean, I guess in all fairness, Marin and I did a stage version of Singing in the Rain, and it looked like it was absolutely pouring on stage, but you had to be in a very specific spot to get wet. So I guess, yeah, they must just have them set up in a way and their choreography set to get them to walk through like sheets of rain, maybe? I don't know. But yeah, I was still it just had me going, huh. And then after all that impressive work, when we get to meet Audrey, her shiner is like absolutely terrible. That black eye, they could have done another pass at it with the makeup department. I mean,
Yeah.
They impress me so much in one way and then not the other.
I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, Audrey, I absolutely love her characterization of Audrey. It just, even down to things like the little squeak she makes when she gets excited. Like, it just, like, Ellen Green is on the next level with this character.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice it for a, like, maybe Mushnick's flower shop is run down because there's not really any flowers in it.
Yeah.
Like, when you first go in, like... Like, how are you supposed to sell anything if there's nothing to sell?
Yeah, like, when the first customer does come in, they do a pretty impressive job of tracking down flowers that I did not see anywhere in the store before.
Yeah.
And I will say that when we learn about the story of Audrey too, in the wholesale flower district, I'm glad that the Chinese guy is actually played by a Chinese guy. So I just want to shout out 1986 for doing the right thing.
Hey, this movie for 1986 is pretty diverse, I must say.
Yeah.
Big ups to them.
Yeah. They didn't do too bad at it. I mean, like, all the really main characters are still white, but...
Sure.
But,
well. Yeah. Those three black women are like one character,
and they're like, they're also solidly in the movie because they are also like the orphan girls or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Do you know how long, like, how, what length of time exists between the time that the movie came out and the time that the, like, Broadway play was made?
That is a good question. I remember reading that, but I didn't write it down anywhere.
Because I'm guessing, like, the musical is based on the 1960 non-musical, which may or may not be based on some sort of written book or story. But
yeah, the musical debuted off-Broadway 1982.
Okay, so it's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah. So, but it didn't actually debut on Broadway until 2003. So... Yeah,
it was off Broadway for a while.
The movie would have been what made it more successful, I'm sure.
Yeah,
maybe if it had.
There was no alternate casting for Seymour.
Not that I came across.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that just blows my mind that Rick Moranis was like the guy.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever seen any of his old SCTV sketches, I mean, he did do singing stuff on that show. Him and Eugene Levy and John Candy had the Schmangy Brothers, which was an accordion playing duo, like polka. So, it's not hard to believe that he can carry a tune if you know more of his older stuff, but... You're right. It does still surprise me because I know that a lot of your touches with Rick Moranis are things like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
I was gonna say,
that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And that just reminds me of Steve Martin because I only knew him and like Father of the Bride and like
Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yes, that one.
Yeah. And you've never seen him without white hair, I'm sure.
No, I have not.
Yeah. It's very rare that he's in a movie without white hair, and here he shows up.
Yeah, that black hair just came out of nowhere. I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
The Audrey 2 puppet, I thought, all along was, like, very good as well. Yeah. I mean, I know it's...
There were four different puppets for four different sizes.
Yeah.
But the thing that always blows my mind, and... Because I was watching it for the show this time, and I know about this fact in the back of my head, but Rick Moranis, in the scenes with the large size plant when the plant is singing, is doing all of his singing and acting in slow motion. And because they have filmed it, they have sped up the film so that the mouth syncs up better for the plant, because they couldn't puppeteer that fast. And so, so Rick Moranis, as he's doing his crosses, he's doing it at half speed. He's lip syncing at half speed. Like with the guy sure looks like plant food to me. He's doing that in slow motion at half speed. So just watching it now, it's just like, damn, he's good. Right?
Yeah.
Because I don't see him slipping up at all. It's like he doesn't even accidentally blink. And it
Yeah.
looks weird because of how fast he blinks, you know? Like it just, yeah.
Wow. That's an interesting fact.
I also love how this movie just gets to be a chance for all his buddies to show up, though. Yeah. Let's bring in Steve Martin, Bill Murray, John Candy.
I wonder how it would have felt. I mean, it probably would have felt like an Adam Sandler film at the time.
Oh,
But
possibly.
in like nowadays, when I was watching this movie, I was like, look at this cast. Like, look at these all these like crazy cameos that
Yeah.
they got.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Even when Steve Martin, like, because of seeing the play, like I knew that that dentist guy exists. But when I saw in the cast, it was like featuring Steve Martin. I was like, huh. That's weird. Like, I wonder who he's gonna be. Like, he'll probably just be like, I would have thought he was gonna be like Christopher Guest, like a guy that just shows up in the store. But when he shows up, like that first scene where it's like the motorcycle on the weird background, and you're
Yeah.
like, my mind was blown.
Well, and I guess that scene took se like the his whole dentist number took a few days to film
Yeah.
because he kept wanting to add things. Like it was Steve Martin's idea to twist the head off the doll and, you know, things like that. And the abuse of his nurse that keeps happening. Like that was his idea at all. So he just kept expanding all the things that were going, so they kept just having to go with it. And yeah, it took a few days to film it.
Are you guys fans of going to the dentist? Or like, I remember when I was a kid, this type of dentist is the dentist that I feared.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was all right. The dentist was fine until I had a. I love going to the dentist as a kid because I love getting mint flavored
Okay.
stuff, and it was
Yeah.
totally fine. And then I had a bad experience with my wisdom teeth. I was like one in, I don't know, the millionth chance or whatever,
Yeah.
and now I hate the dentist. So.
Well, yeah, I have
Oh
found in my older age that I am less susceptible to the freezing. And so my last couple
no.
major dental procedures I've had to be knocked out for.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess I sh all those years of shooting Novocaine recreationally, you know, it's caught up to me. I'm now immune.
That's wild.
So, have you noticed that somewhere that's green sounds like part of your world from Little Mermaid?
Yes.
Same composer, Alan Menken. Yeah.
I know, I found it surprising that he it would I mean it seemed a lot similar. Like I feel a lot of his work sounds really
Yeah.
like I know it's Alan Menken, you know?
Yeah.
He's the Disney guy.
Yeah, it's like when you know it's Hans Zimmer or you know it's Danny Elfman. Yeah, you
That
yeah.
is
Yeah.
true.
Yeah. So here's another cameo for you, Colin. You may not have noticed. All his dental tools that he's proud of, they all show up in Batman when the Joker is removing all his bandages and everything. Those are the bloody tools, are the same ones that they used in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it because like they just exist? Were they done on the same sound stage?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because this was done on Pinewood Studios, which I believe is where the first Batman was filmed. Yeah.
Okay.
Pinewood Studios. Yeah. So, and then, of course, you know, we've got the fun connection because Jack Nicholson was the original patient in the original Little Shop of Horrors. See, there's all these connections. I like that Bill
Yeah.
Murray character, though. That was a character that when I saw this movie when I was young, I had no idea what was going on. Right? But yeah. But now that I get it, I love the masochist character. He's hilarious.
Yeah, that was a cool cameo. I mean, I'm always impressed whenever I'm watching these old movies and I pick up on something like that, because I'm just like,
Yeah.
normally all these things just fly right over my head. I was thinking to your point earlier about like the look of it being filmed on a sound stage. I think that does such a service to this movie as a musical adaptation as a whole. Like the one thing I kept feeling as I was watching the movie was that often musical movies that are made on musicals, they lose some element of this, like what makes it seeing it on stage so good. And I feel like being on a sound stage, this is like one of the rare instances where I think that it lended like a theatrical quality to the overall look of the movie that you don't normally get.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I'm not a huge fan of when Fox does a musical live, it gives you that same sort of feeling though of having a camera that's going around. You know, like that the musical where you're kind of living in the world with them. And so that's what I like about those Fox things is and that's what this feels like because it's on a soundstage. Yeah, it's kind of like a multi-layered theatrical production, you know, a four-dimensional theatrical production. This is a one of two movies that Steve Martin appeared in this year that has a singing plant, because Three Amigos has the singing bush.
Well, Mary, wasn't Mary mentioning that she works in a flower shop
Yeah.
before? Do you have any like super exotic plants in your flower shop, or is it just your like standard, you know, roses fair?
Well, I'm not a florist any means, but I work also work as a nanny, and so one of the moms that I the one of the families that I was working with, she's a florist, and she started up her business in in Australia, I believe, and she moved here. I'm in Toronto, and she was like, "Marin, do you want to work at my flower shop?" And I was like, "All right." And so when I do, I like work in the retail, and then in the back are all the flowers for like weddings and birthdays and things. When all the flower, so we get like local flowers, but then we get flowers that are shipped in. And so, for example, our roses, we get a lot from Ecuador. And so I'm the one that helps like take off all the leaves and stems, and I process them so then the florists can arrange them. And lately, like all brides have been wanting like tropical and like bright colors. So I'm getting like all of these like huge types of flowers I've never seen before. So like I remember in the scene, Audrey is like putting together the funeral bouquet, and then she's like, I don't even know what she's throwing on those like calla lilies, I think they were.
Yeah, she sprays it with glue and she's throwing glitter at it. So is
Yeah.
that standard practice in a flower shop?
Oh yeah, I always throw glue on my flowers. And I was like, what's going on, like for seeing all the flowers that were getting sold at the shop and then like they were running out with. I'm like, where's the fridge? Like, you're supposed to put a lot of the flowers that they were taking in the fridge. And I
So
was like, all right.
realism is not something that they went for with this flower shop at all. No.
No, definitely not. And
Okay.
it was funny though. Like, I'm no florist by any means, but I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even less of a florist, and I know that five lilies in a vase with some
Yeah.
glitter thrown at it is not a nice arrangement for a funeral either.
No, I mean, that is a very popular, that's like I would say the flower actually that gets used a lot for funerals is that one.
Yeah, but
But then
not
I was watching
five.
the No, not five. No, not five. And then I was watching the 1960 one before watching the 1986 version, and in it was in the flower shop. I watched the black and white one, and they're selling carnations, and this guy comes in and he wants carnations, and you just see like they're all like falling apart, and like they're like broken stems and everything, and this guy comes in and he's like, "Oh, I want carnations to eat." And that's all I remember from that version of the movie.
Okay.
I was like, all right, that there's I'm glad there was none of that in the 1986 version.
I'm so bad whenever I go to a florist to buy my, well, that's if I even go to a florist. Normally, if I'm buying my wife flowers, I just find like the best looking one at a superstore. But the times that I have gone to a florist, I was like, I have no idea what is nice. Just like I was just looking for suggestions. Like, I don't know what makes a bouquet good. Like, guys, I just feel like guys don't understand the allure of flowers, or at least I don't.
No, yeah. Yeah, no,
I
I
mean,
don't.
it's complex a little bit. Don't worry, I get a couple of customers that are like regular, and I make bouquets, like the smaller ones. And
Yeah.
I get like when I had like a fiance, he just got engaged to his, with his fiance, and he comes and he's like, "I don't know about flowers. Can I have a single stem rose?" And I go, "A single, you want one flower?" And I sold him one flower. I was like, "Don't you want a bouquet? Don't you want?" And he's like, "I just want a rose." I'm like, "Oh, right." And so I found one in the back. I had to go all the way in the back. So we weren't just selling single stems. It was like the weirdest thing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Can you break 100? No, I can't. Well, then I'll just have to buy twice as many.
Or I'll have to bring in a plant like Audrey number two to
That's
bring them
right.
in.
Isn't it
That's right.
now that if business at your boss's shop ever slips, you can just like find like a little Audrey 2, like I
That's
don't
right.
know, replica
Finalia.
and just put it in the window.
Put it in a coffee can and put it in a window. But what kind of
Yeah.
coffee can? I'll tell you in Sponsorship Corner. There we go. I got there. Sponsorship Corner brought to you by MoviePosters.com. That's right, we've got a sponsor now. Very excited about this. With over 100,000 titles to choose from, MoviePosters.com is the number one destination for posters from your favorite films and stars. Use Like This One 15 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. We've got a discount code. I'm very excited about this because I recently bought some movie posters from these guys, and I mean they're beautiful. I love them. My Princess Bride poster, my Avengers Infinity War poster. Great guys over at MoviePosters.com, and I did look up if Little Shop of Horrors is your favorite movie. Well, they've got that poster on MoviePosters.com, so go check them out. Use our discount code. Always on the lookout for product placements and movie this week, Little Shop of Horrors is brought to you by Cadillac and Chevrolet Vehicles, FTD Flowers, Telechron Clocks, Maxwell House Coffee, Crisco, Chews Chewing Gum, Better Homes and Gardens, Horticulture, TV Guide and Life Magazines, Checker Cabs, The Roxy Theater, and the Globe Wernicke Company. Plus the probably fictional Skid Row Herald, the North Side Newsy, Suzanne's Fashion, Gordoni's Restaurant, Flying A Service, Marty's Hairstyling, Don's Flower Market, Chang's, and of course Mushnick's Flower Shop, but never Mushnick and Sons like it is in the play. They cut out that musical number. And I'm sure an argument could be made for Tupperware. Because in the Somewhere That's Green song, they're demonstrating Tupperware. She's showing the burp, right? You know, like that's clearly Tupperware, even if there's no label shown. But so Tupperware. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Nice.
Yeah, Mr. Mushnick never gets to sing in this movie at all. He's supposed to have like two different songs at least. There's Mushnick and Son, and then there's the Clothes for Renovations song that he's part of.
Yeah, I was trying to. I mean, it's been so long since I saw the play, but there it was like one of those things where I was watching the movie and I was like having, I don't know, like phantom memories of things that I thought were supposed to be in it, but I wasn't sure. And
Yeah.
so, do you know like what specifically is different from the play?
Well, I mean, as we've already pointed out, you saw the wrong ending.
Yeah.
But the killing of the dentist is one thing that's different, is because in the musical, he's got the song about it, and what we have here is an ethical dilemma, lest I help him get the mask removed. He doesn't have a prayer, sure the gun was never fired, but the way events transpired, I could finish him with simple laissez-faire. So he's singing about what a struggle it is to let this guy die in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
But in the movie, it's kind of like, it just looks like he's, you don't see the same struggle without the song, I guess. But right. Yeah, there is supposed to be the Mr. Mushnick wants to adopt him, and there's no blackmailing of him. Like, he doesn't witness, like, he finds the drops of blood, but he doesn't witness Seymour actually chopping him up, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah. And there is the Clothes for Renovation song when they fix up the shop.
Okay.
I was confused about, so in the movie when he the dentist dies, how did he die again? Because I know that
nitrous oxide
got in the gun. Yeah, did he put that on himself?
Yeah. But then he couldn't get it off, which is another thing that the song would have explained, because the dentist side of it, the song goes on. He's talking about how it's stuck, like the mask gets stuck on him himself. Oh. And so that's something that's not quite as obvious in the movie. Like, I think he says it's stuck, but help me get it off. But yeah, it's more when there's a whole song about it.
I just thought he was going crazy. Like, I was like, what is happening? No. And I'm like, oh, he's wearing the mask. Oh, he's wearing the mask. Like, I just, like, I didn't put that two and two together.
Yeah, yeah. He killed himself with nitrous oxide.
Exactly. That's what I was like, oh.
Which is where, yeah, if the he had the Moral Dilemma song, there we go. That's why.
Yeah.
Sometimes in musicals, we want them to sum up their thoughts and feelings. Sometimes it helps. I like the little details that they threw in, like the fact that Audrey's sling is a fishnet. I don't know why that makes me laugh, that she comes in with this fishnet sling. But, you know, I like little things like that. Or when the plant decides to make the phone call to Audrey, and after he hangs up the phone, reaches into the coin return to see if his dime came back. I like that touch too. Like, I like the little touches like that.
Mm.
Oh, another difference from the musical also is the Mean Green Mother from Outer Space song is not in the musical. So they gave Audrey two an extra song.
Okay.
You saying that what he was destroying, or was that like before? Like, was that only in the one version, or
no? That should be in both versions. That's when Seymour pulls the gun on Audrey 2 and starts shooting at him. But then Audrey 2 gets the gun away, and all the little plants are singing at the same time.
That's the song. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that whole song is very creepy. And only in this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
My daughter watched this movie with me. Well, watched like the last half, and she was liking it until this point.
Oh, okay.
When the plant ate Mr. Mushnick and then went psycho, she was not here for it.
Oh, okay. Well, good job traumatizing your daughter. Then I guess she'll never want to see any musicals ever.
Well, it's funny because she asked to watch it again. She was like, "Can we watch the plant movie?"
Oh,
and then okay. And then so I put it on again from the beginning. Then she was getting annoyed because it was taking too long for the plant to come on the screen, and then she liked it again up until, like, I guess to grow for me and Seymour pricks his finger, and then every time he would put his finger close to her and the plant would snap, my daughter would like jump and be like, and then she was like, I'm done, and I was like, okay.
Well, you know, you tried to do something other than Paw Patrol.
Yeah.
I would have gotten a message saying, hey, Sean, how much for this Little Shop of Horrors DVD? My daughter loves it.
Yeah. I mean, but she still loves Nightmare Before Christmas, and I would argue that Nightmare Before Christmas is still as creepy as this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably.
Does she like Coraline?
We tried watching that one, like, I think she was probably 2.5, and she was scared. We should retry it.
Yeah,
she liked Nightmare. Well, I'm still scared, of course. I hated that movie.
Yeah, really didn't like the button eyes. She was good with it until then.
I had a thing about buttons, and I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think with something like Nightmare Before Christmas, at least they're all still animated, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the big difference with this is, okay, the plant is fun, But yeah. When you have a human person in front of the plant, less fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to get her into like live action movies, and so far the only one that she's bid on was Liar Liar, and my wife doesn't want her watching that movie.
No, I had a couple of inappropriate choices like that that would cycle through with my son when I was younger. Master of Disguise was one of them, the terrible Dana Carvey movie, and the other one was Undercover Brother. That one was probably wildly inappropriate for him, but at least it wasn't the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
True.
I guess to get authenticity for the props, they went to a bunch of thrift stores in New York and found, you know, like antique props. However, they had trouble finding the garbage cans. Set decorator Tessa Davis went around New York and found anyone that had an old beat up garbage can and offered to trade it for a new one. That's the level of commitment that was on this film.
Wow.
Yeah. For authenticity, but they couldn't put a fridge in for the flowers.
No, exactly. No, they did it.
I thought that was a fun fact. I asked both of you what your favorite musical numbers were. I guess I never really said anything myself. I love Skid Row just because there's something about everyone dancing in the street that I love about that. But there was something special about the Somewhere That's Green and how it's done in this movie. I love that whole scene with the plastic on the furniture and just even the touch Rick Moranis is given a bit of a dad gut for, you know, when he's mowing the lawn, when he stretches his back, he's got a little gut on him. You know, I love what they did with that scene. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Do you guys have any relatives that put plastic on their furniture? Marin's probably too young.
Do you mean maybe. like the clear plastic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have any family that did that, but when I would go to work for nannying, they do. And it really annoyed me.
Yeah, my baba back in the day had she had put plastic like plastic covers on her furniture. All I like remember when I was young about her house is like I like no kids were allowed to sit on the living room furniture. Like we could sit at the table, but I don't think I ever like sat in the living room, because all the furniture was covered in plastic.
Yeah, like a lot of these references, I guess, are kind of lost these days. I mean, you know, I think of someone like Marin. If it hadn't been for the fact that I've done period piece shows with you, I'd think that even the rotary dial phone might confuse you. Yeah. You know,
I still had that. I think it's like if you go maybe 2 years. So I'm Gen Z, but there's like a section of Gen Z that's like late 90s and early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, I'm no Gen Z because like if you literally if you go maybe 2 or 3 years younger than me, they had nothing that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had a rotary phone, and then I had a phone that was in my, I had a landline phone in my room.
Okay. And
dial up internet.
I had a VHS and cassette player in my room too.
Wow, nice.
So I had the classic still. Don't worry.
Yeah.
and my grandma had that phone where you would hold it and you would hold the ear.
Oh, like a classic like 20s phone.
Yeah, she kept that. She didn't want to get rid of it.
Those are heavy.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. So I guess I don't really have anything else to say about this movie. I will say when Seymour attacks Audrey too with the gun, there are way more bullets shot out of that gun than it holds. There's at least a dozen shots, and that gun only holds 5 shots. But
wait, I have one more question. In the play, does Audrey die?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, because she says, you know, the same sort of speech where it's like, you know, once I'm dead, which will be very soon. That's a joke from the play, which will be very shortly. But yeah, it's feed me to the plant so that I'm part of the plant. And, you know, and yeah, you'll always have me around, that kind of. Yeah. Yeah, she dies in the play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so depending on which version you watch, you either see them live happily ever after and end up in their somewhere that's green home at the end, or you see Seymour dive in after or get eaten, and then the plants take over the whole planet. Like, it's a special effects extravaganza that you missed, Colin.
I was like, what am I watching? Like, it was like one thing after another. Then the military comes in. Then you see these explosions. Then you see the plant being like Godzilla. Then you see this. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this happened in another movie where I watched the wrong I watched the some sort of altered version.
It was Last Halloween, The Wicker Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same sort of thing happened. Yeah. We both me and the guest happened to get the extended edition, and Colin found the non-extended. And so he's like, "What? What scene are you talking about now?" I mean, luckily, it is only the ending that has changed. The rest of the movie that you got is the same.
It's interesting to me that, like, I don't know. It just shows, like, a little bit to me how, like, weak-minded the people of the 1980s were, that they couldn't handle a movie where the main character died. Because I kind of think that's a better ending.
It is.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't really. There's something I feel that, like, gets lost in the Seymour Audrey love story by the fact that they get the happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're both kind of like, it's like not true to their characters. It's almost like weirdly counter, but I don't know. I guess people want happiness.
Well, and I did read in a couple places that Frank Oz has gone on to say that, well, the audiences didn't like it. And the difference between the movie and the play is that at the play, the actors come out at the end and you get to see that they're okay when they take their bows. And so, I mean, it does help enforce what you are saying right now, where it's like, how weak-minded are you that it's like, they didn't really die, guys.
Yeah. And I'm sure they all believe pro wrestling was real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, Rick Moranis did a movie or two after this one. Don't worry. He's okay.
They're just like, what do you mean Steve Martin's dead? No Three Amigos? No
more. Wait a minute. But he's in that movie. How can he be in both movies? You're witchcraft.
That's funny.
Well, there we go. That's Little Shop of Horrors. Now, Colin, Marin, on IMDb, it scored 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 81. People love this movie. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 91% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 71%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a vine from a plant nearly hitting you in the nuts, hit us with some reviews.
All right, you're gonna have to do some editing around this because I don't have my phone, so I'm just doing this live.
Okay.
All right, Rotten Tomatoes user says Petty B says 5 out of 5 stars. Little Shop of Horrors remains so genuinely charming and well structured. I'm generally referring to the original ending, even if some songs in the process lose their meaning in the story with its darker turn. To this day, with frenetic humor, camp, and brilliantly designed set work to boot, even the choice of readaptation of the 1960 cult classic is a brilliant idea unto itself due to the potential of the story and the characters for a musical format.
Yeah, it seems generally positive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lou T says 3.5 stars out of 5. Every once in a while, a film comes around that is so wacky and charming that it almost feels like a fever dream. Little Shop of Horrors is exactly that in all the finest ways. Being a musical horror comedy, this is a film unlike anything else. The most important part of any musical would be the songs, and this one hits the mark, with plenty of catchy bops and truly well-done performances to weave the story around. The cast fill their roles with so much charm, even the villains will leave you waiting for them to pop up on screen. Rather than fast-paced, it sometimes leaves you wishing they would linger on a plot point and not move on so quickly, as there are some moments that I feel could have benefited from some extra time. Though the ending is fine, I can't help but wish they stuck to the original ending and really gave us something to talk about. Altogether, you won't leave this film disappointed, and you just might find a new cult love.
Yeah, it wasn't until the 2016 Blu-ray that the original ending kind of came into the world. So, you know, my DVD is much older than that. That's actually my second copy of Little Shop of Horrors because someone stole my first one.
Okay. Okay, Jack T says 5 out of 5 stars. Well, guys, this is it. Little Shop of Horrors is the film I've watched when I was a kid. My brothers enjoyed this movie as well, starring Rick Moranis. I enjoyed the songs like the opening song, Skid Row and Downtown, Grow For Me, the Dentist song, Feed Me, Seymour, Supper Time, and the Mean Green Mother from Outer Space and Suddenly Seymour. Yeah, I know, that sounds like a mouthful. It was. But I love all of them. Especially when I love the song where the plant is singing the Mean Green Mother from Outer Space, even though it had some swear words in it, and Steve Martin singing Dentist, absolutely wonderful. And I've had a lot of fun in the year 2005 while I'm at it, playing video games, which I played on Dinosaur, Sonic Heroes, Donald Duck, PK, Shark Tale, Disney's Skate Adventure, Muppets Party Cruise, and Tack and the Power of Juju. My bros love this film as well. What can I say? I love it. I've seen it a million times before, and I'll definitely go see it a million times again.
Okay. Why all the video game references all of a sudden? Let's name drop some video games just to prove that I know the 80s. Is that what we're doing? I don't know. I guess the Mean Green Mother from Outer Space song, I remember reading this, is it's the first song with curse words. That guy brought up the fact that it had foul language. It's the first song with swear words that was ever nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we go on to things like It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp and Lose Yourself. But yeah, this was the first one, Mean Green Mother.
And with this one, 4.5 stars. Ford A says, this movie is so underrated. It has groundbreaking effects, not including the CGI bit at the end. And the acting is pretty good. And Steve Martin is hilarious. And though it has a grisly premise and some grisly scenes, the campiness makes it to the point where if there was none, this would be R. Rated R, I'm assuming he's saying.
I guess so.
Only problems I have with it are 1, the weird pacing. And 2, Audrey got kind of annoying sometimes. But otherwise, must watch movie.
Yeah, he's either saying R-rated or he's a pirate.
Yeah, you never know with the internet.
Makes me think of Dodgeball. No, you are a pirate. Arr. Okay, so Little Shop of Horrors. I'm just going to say I'm never going to hate this movie. This is one of those movies that this is why Rick Moranis has always been so endearing to me. Like this more than any other Rick Moranis, this is the one that has always had a special place in my heart and made him so likable as a person to me. I love him as Seymour. I love the movie. I love the musical, you know, so I don't have anything new to really say about this movie, except I was so glad to go back to it because it has been a while since I've seen it. So let's go to the people that have never seen this movie before. Shitty copy aside, Marin. Now, like, have you ever, you've never seen Little Shop of Horrors on stage, correct? That's what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you take away from your first experience of Little Shop of Horrors?
I mean, it was pretty good. Pretty average, you know? Like, I feel like if I watched it earlier, probably maybe would have liked it better. Maybe, like, if I was more, when I first started listening to the music, maybe
okay.
I would have liked to see it then. But, I mean, it's still pretty good. It's definitely, I can tell it's from the time that it was filmed. Like, there are some, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, some more cringy moments, but it's fine.
Yeah.
That's what musical sometimes.
Are you even thinking of like the plant trying to goose the one lady in the radio station?
Yeah, I was like, oh. Like, okay then, all right. Like
that
caught me by surprise.
Yeah, that's definitely an 80s-ism.
Yeah. I'm like that's what makes it, you know, like there's like the certain things that make the, I just know when it was like recorded and things like that. But overall I think it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, like just a month ago, Colin and I watched Spaceballs, where they had the same sort of joke, also in a movie featuring John Candy, where a tail goes up a skirt and just has to lift. It's an 80s sensibility thing, is, well, we have to have
Sexual assault.
some sort of sexual, just some light sexual assault, like just some of that friendly sexual assault. So, Colin, what about you? You've seen the musical, so you're a step above Marin, I guess, but what about you with the movie? What did you think?
Yeah, I don't remember the musical that well, having only seen it once. I do remember like not feeling like it was anything to write home about. Like definitely not like my favorite stage production that I've ever seen. But I can offer this movie nothing but like the highest of praise. I think it's not an amazing movie, but it's better than I felt like it had any right to be. Like on face value, when I read the cast for this movie and like knowing what the play was about, I was like, oh, this movie is going to be so stupid. But it's just like Rick Moranis, God bless him,
So
is
likable.
so charming
Very
and so likable
endearing.
that I could just not hate him. Which is weird because I nearly hated him in Spaceballs. I did not feel the same way about him in Spaceballs. But in this movie, like he's just completely like in whatever his zone is that like he carries this movie so well. I thought all the cameos were great. Like Steve Martin I thought was
Knocked it
phenomenal
out of
as
the
the
park.
dentist for like yeah, if they gave awards for just like cameos, I think this one should have won it. I think too, like I was saying before, it's just I'm a fan of musicals, I'm a fan of movies, and one thing I know is like it's rare that they translate. Like I can only think of a handful that I've liked. I liked Phantom. I know it's not great, but I like the Phantom movie.
I
I
liked
like Les
Les Mis.
Mis, but then you have the other ones like Cats.
I'm looking at you, cats.
Yeah, but you have those ones and like
I'm
where
so
it's
nervous
just
about Wicked, I'll tell you
yeah, and like
that
Wicked, where I'm
much.
like, ugh, I don't know. But this is one where I think as a movie, the musical is better. There were just for whatever reason, I just felt that it was, and maybe it could have just been like the cast too,
I mean, I
but
did
I just
also realize while you were talking, I believe they've shifted the order of the Suddenly Seymour song. I feel like something, one of the songs has also moved around. So, I mean, maybe the
okay.
story, because it's so much more streamlined than the stage version. Like maybe that's part of the reason also that the movie can give you a more comfortable feeling, is it just it's fast. It goes fast.
Maybe, but yeah, I was just impressed by that aspect of like for a 1980s movie where I feel like it would have already been hard to make a live action musical movie. I mean, we had Grease, I guess. I'd say this movie is to me is like comparable to Grease. I like that movie
Maybe
as well.
Grease is considered a comedy.
Yeah,
So there we go. We found another one for the tagline.
there
Rocky
you go.
Horror and Grease, because Grease
Yeah,
was
but yeah.
78.
Yeah, my main takeaway was that I was just really impressed with that aspect of it. Because watching the stage play, I was kind of like, yeah, is a
It's all
resounding meh
right.
from me. Whereas watching the movie, I was like, oh, this is really good. So
Right on.
that's kind of where I'll leave it.
Cool. Well, there we go. That is Little Shop of Horrors, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, big huge thank you to our spooky five timer with Halloween, Marin Richardson. Thank you
We didn't
for
get her a
coming.
jacket.
Yeah, right. That's right. We're really behind on getting out those Five Timer Club jackets. I mean, annual tradition. Thanks as always, Marin, for joining us. If people want to see you out there showing off your singing or showing off your dancing, where can people find you out there?
Well, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Marin Lee Italia. Yes, that is my full name. And I will be posting a new and upcoming website and YouTube page, so be on the lookout. MarinLeeItalia.com.
Nice.
You can find me on social media for now.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And
the voice of an angel.
Yeah. And actually, you have something you can plug live because this is an October episode, so. Yeah.
Okay. If you are in the Toronto area, come see Jekyll and Hyde live, an orchestra concert running October 25th and 26th at the Meridian Arts Center in North York. Woohoo!
Nice. There we go. See, another plug. Right on. But yeah, as always, thanks for joining us, Marin.
Thank you.
If you like that show, well, one thing you can do, well, just tell people. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast. Share our posts, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars. Help drive us up some charts with some sciencey algorithms and all that sort of stuff. Or if you want to be a financial supporter and become an executive producer of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family and you get a shout out like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our social media pages and podcast episodes. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, Halloween once again. Our 5th Halloween. This is pretty exciting. We're coming up on 200 episodes. In November, we're going to be celebrating our 200th. That's pretty exciting. But, Colin, I've been holding this one back because you don't know what we have in store for next week for Halloween.
I don't.
Well, we have our favorite guest, Mr. David Owen. I mean, that's fair to say. He's not our favorite guest, but boy, David brings something different to the show every time. Mr. David Owen is going to be back, and he is bringing us a movie called Warlock. Have you ever seen it?
I mean, I know what a warlock is, but okay. I don't know what this movie is.
Okay. Yeah, it's, I guess, here's a connection to Marin. It's got Julian Sands in it, and when we watched Arachnophobia, Julia Sands was the scientist guy in that movie. So, or the bug guy, yeah. So there we go, we got a little connection. Yeah. So, Warlock, I did a quick IMDb of it myself, and it's a warlock from the 1700s. Ends up in the 20th century while being chased by a witch hunter. That's kind of the synopsis that I got. Okay.
Yeah, I'm down for this. It looks funny. Is it funny?
I have no idea. No idea. I literally just told you everything I know about this movie. So knowing David, okay. I mean, David was Wicker Man. David was what was that vampire movie? Oh God, I don't even remember. The Hunger? Was it the Hunger?
Yeah.
And of course, he joined us on Buckaroo Banzai. That wasn't his choice, though, but he was the right guy for it. So yeah, Warlock next week. I've never seen it. I vaguely remember that poster. There's a guy standing there with a scary looking shadow behind him. I vaguely remember that poster or that DVD cover, but yeah, never seen it.
Nice.
So there we go. Until next week when we watch Warlock, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you then on I Used to Like This One. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like... No, that one's wrong. I was going to say like abusing your Audrey, but no. No, that's wrong.
That'll get us canceled for sure.
Yeah.